Good morning. Welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast, the first one on Monday that we are trying out. Today we thought we would talk about, first maybe just sort of the political landscape and racism and Trump and just a variety of things that are swirling around in our sick adult minds. And then we got a parenting question that I thought was interesting.
Our sick adult minds? Right?
Adult.
Oh, adult. Okay, yeah, because you're sick. I'm not sick. I thought I was sick, but I'm not sick.
You're sick, but I really am praying that you don't get sick, because if you get sick, I'll be mad at you.
Right.
And, yes, so you can tell that I am still struggling to breathe, and I probably will have a coughing fit in the course of this.
She's had a flu for a week. Short time. And there's so much housework for you to do when you get better.
I know. It's piling up.
No one can do anything.
I know. Nobody can do anything. Just waiting for me to get better. Nobody can put anything away or do any laundry. It's just this vast sea of helplessness before me. So, actually, no, everybody's been very kind and helpful. You've been very nice to me. Even though I've been mad at you. I feel like it's your fault that I got sick.
No, I know. I noticed that.
I'm not sure why. It's just that my spirit tells me that it was something that you did, so.
Yeah, I noticed
the rage.
Yeah.
So, but let's not just keep talking. I could keep talking about my illness.
I know you could.
For a while, because it's really upset me. But instead of that, we thought you had some, do you have anything to say about?
Yeah, and I just want to talk a little bit, not really, but well, kind of about race, but okay. So last week, when the two shootings took place, it was enraging to go online, and we were talking. This is one of we hate Facebook now. But to go online and just the immediate knee jerk, nothing wrong happened here on the conservative side. I mean, this is going to be. Once quote unquote all the facts are in, we're going to find out that this is just a justified shooting. Both of them are, and there's no reason for anyone to be upset about this. And
why would you say that that's knee jerk rather than the left saying ha 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 all people all white?
Because it was so politicized. Because immediately when the shootings happened. The idea was, well, we've got to get in there. At least a lot of people I saw posting, it seemed as though, maybe I'm making an assumption, but we've got to get in there and say that this will probably turn out to be justified, because it was like an attack. It felt like it was a preemptive attack to set down some markers against the leftist onslaught. I mean, it was politicized immediately. Yeah. So instead of just thinking, okay, well, this man who is a father and husband and was shot and he's dead and people are mourning and this is a horrible thing.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. And what did happen? It was boom. Left versus right. Black Lives Matter versus Make America Great Again. And it was it was poisonous, and it continued to be poisonous all week, I thought.
Just to play devil's advocate, do you think that part of the reason for that could be that some of these shootings, well, some of them have been crying wolf, like some of them have been, I don't know, justified, but it wasn't somebody that was pure as the wind-driven snow. Then it was politicized by the left, so now the right says, well, you could do it, so can I.
Sure. I don't think anyone, I hope nobody is suggesting that the pure, one meme that goes on is, well, you know, what? Let's look at the police record and see how bad and evil these guys were. Who were shot. Oh, look at this. He's done this and this and this. And so, okay, well, that means that...
He deserved...
Yeah, I mean, I don't care if he has a police record a mile long. I don't care if he's a wicked guy. There are limits to what we expect well, there are limits to what police officers can and should do. And right. and the argument from the side of those who think that the police officers are, or not all, but some police officers are acting too quickly, is that a different kind of calculation goes into a confrontation when a black yeah. person's involved and a white person. And usually that difference is, it does kind of, I wouldn't say racist, but there's this kind of sense, oh my, this person probably is involved in some kind of nefarious activity. So I'm immediately more on the alert. I'm immediately more on the, I'm more worried about this guy than I would be another guy. And I was saying, I think it's probably true on the other side as well. I've posted something on Facebook about my experience in Mali, or actually on the highway from Ivory Coast to Mali, where it was a bad time in Ivory Coast, attempted coup, I think. And mm-hmm. we were getting out just to go to your home in Farkala, and every, 50 or so miles, there were checkpoints.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it was the border.
Maybe that was what it was. I don't remember.
I think we were at the border.
But I remember it was stopping, and there was a gate across the road, and there were a bunch of men there with Kalashnikovs. Mm-hmm. Some of them very young. One guy was really young. I looked at him.
Yeah, he was like 14.
Some
of them were children.
And he had, this one in particular, but a couple of others did too, had their rifles leveled at the car. And they were very casual. They weren't necessarily threatening.
Well, that's because I don't think they'd had a lot of training about how to hold the gun. So you just kind of hold it ready to shoot,
what are you going to do?
The crook of your arm. And
I thought to myself, well, this, I remember being a little bit frightened by that because I had been trained how to use a rifle. And I knew that wasn't, you don't point weapons at people like that.
I was never really afraid of that because I didn't know. It was a little normal.
They didn't look like they were too.
Nobody was angry.
No, nobody's angry. But still, I realized if I make the wrong move, I look at them wrong. They could, a situation like that could easily snap. And so I was saying online, it was the first time in my life I'd been not able to trust that the person who has the weapon and is in authority is going to make a professional decision.
See, that's interesting because I never grew up in Africa thinking that the police were people that you trust. Mm-hmm. They're not on your side necessarily. They're on their own side. So maybe you could get them on your side with money, but they're not on your side. There's no...
Okay, but in America, we grew up. I mean, I actually remember first grade. The reason I remember is because we had a police officer friend named Ann Pratt, and she was officer friendly that year, and she came in. And
she was her what?
Officer friendly. You know?
I don't have any idea.
Officer friendly?
No.
Officer friendly would kind of yeah. Friendly. You there's a
is that in, like the Richard Scarry books?
No, it was no. You don't know. You don't know what officer friendly is?
No, how would I do
okay,
that?
Okay, so we were like in first grade, and the police officer department sends an officer to go to the classroom and talk about things, talk about obeying the laws, talk about, what a police officer does. Let's look at the police officer's car, turn on the little lights. I totally remember this. It was great for officer friendly. We loved officer friendly coming over.
So did they take turns at being officer
friendly? Yeah, there were different officer friendlies.
And you called them that?
That was their, yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's really funny.
I didn't
grow up with officer friendly. And neither apparently did the population of African Americans in the United States.
But that's either. So that's embedded in my mind. So when I think of police officer, I think...
Yeah.
Officer friendly, I think.
Right.
If you're in trouble, you go to the... And I think for the vast, vast majority of the cases, that's the way it remains in the United States. We have really good, honorable men and women in
the police force. And certainly the people that we've met here in Binghamton have
absolutely.
Been very kind.
Oh, man, they've been great, police officers here. So I think that's generally true. But all I was bringing up that point was, I think that the fear that I felt with the 14-year-old holding the Kalashnikov on me, or on us, is something akin to what black people feel when they're...
Yeah.
I imagine that's exactly how they feel when they're pulled over. Not because the police officers are bad, necessarily, but because they've seen so many shootings, they've heard about so many shootings, and so there's a...
And you get a...
And so you have the guy who's pulled over, the black guy who's pulled over, afraid, not knowing what to do. I mean, he's seen people get shot for being compliant.
Especially if he does. We were watching a
video of a guy who was walking away and was shot in the back. I mean. so they don't know if you don't know whether you're going to be shot if you reach for your wallet, or you.
And if you have some kind of arrest warrant, but if you've been
right, if you're in trouble, right.
You're going to be more afraid. And it should be an offense. Like, you haven't done something that's a capital offense. And you should be summarily executed by a random police officer.
No.
Who, if you were white, would wrestle you to the ground, as there was a video of that.
I saw that.
Weird, large white man who gets wrestled to the ground, even though he has a gun.
Yeah.
Because that's somehow less threatening, even though he's quite large and angry and evil-looking. He gets to be wrestled to the ground, but sort of thin, waspy, young black men just get shot.
So I would be terrified. Just a routine traffic stop.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And so that increases the chances
of it escalating.
Because the police officer might be a little afraid, and then and the person he's pulling over is afraid, and so it's like the perfect storm of fear that's going to cause a reaction. And then when it happens, the internet explodes with, well, no doubt the police officer was doing exactly what he should, because look at the record of this guy. He was evil. And then the
thing also that I thought, like, if you are in a state that's open carry and you're allowed to have a gun, you can't just shoot people who have guns then, can you?
Right.
Like, you could say, put down your gun.
Right. Well, we saw the video of the person who had the PI, is that what you're talking about?
I didn't actually watch them. I prefer to sleep at night.
Right. Right, okay.
But some people have said that some of the people who have been shot had guns, but
if they were
in a state where they're licensed to carry a gun, certainly if the police stop you, you do have to put your gun down. But if you can't just be killed just for having a gun in a state that you were allowed to have a gun. Is that
absolutely
wrong? Or
no, that's right.
Okay.
But I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not sure what specific case you're talking about there.
I thought it was in the one in Charlotte.
I don't remember.
Okay. See, there's so many. We can't keep them straight now.
So that's the first thing. Is it's just the initial reaction of both sides entrenching themselves, and the police are always wrong, or the police are always right. And
either way,
it's ridiculous. And second, the lack of care is just mourning, I guess, on the part of Christians for other Christians who lost people, or Christians on the part of these poor families who lose people.
Yeah.
And I mean, regardless of whether they were, I mean, setting aside completely whether it was a justified or non-justified shooting. Man, the guy's dead.
Right. Well, but I think there's no mourning overall for anything anymore. I think that's part of the sort of sickening nature of this political season. Because I was, at the same time, it occurred to me over the weekend that, you know, we have sort of the weekly or daily shooting of an African American by the police, and we have the weekly or monthly, maybe, terrorist event by some Middle Eastern person against people in shopping malls or bombs, and you know, or stabbings. And there's a similar kind of, oh, I bet it's the Lutherans. Oh, no, I guess it really is some young Middle Eastern man. And there's no mourning on that cause either. So I thought, like, there's two populations of people being attacked and killed. There's Muslims attacking whites. There's whites, or
Muslims don't care if they're white or not.
No, that's true. They attack everybody, and then there's the sort of death of the African American community.
Not all Muslims. We should say radical Islamists.
Okay. Right. All right. I'll be PC today. So there's this sort of swirling internal death going on. And there's no mourning. You know, it just happens. You see it on Facebook, you move on.
Well, you rack it up to your side or against you. Right? So this incident is going to help help my political cause or not? Is it fodder that I can use to attack the left or the right? Or is it...
Yeah. Or I don't really see it anymore because it happens every day.
Yeah.
So it's just become kind of what America is. Merca. This is... I find that troubling.
I do too.
And depressing.
Yeah. This is kind of you said America, and we've been talking about how there just seems to be this kind of ugly religion birthing itself.
Oh my gosh.
Birthing itself on the right.
Excuse me.
And I'm a conservative, but I'm really disgusted by the Trump support on the conservative side. And not everyone who supports Trump. I understand there are some legitimate reasons why you might want to do it if you think that. Well, I'm trying to think of reason.
I think some people are holding their nose and voting for Trump because they have calculated and they think that's the least offensive thing they can do. Okay, and I get that.
But then on the other side is the kind of virulent kind of, if you're not voting for Trump, you're not American. You know, it's this kind of angry, get on board the Trump train or it's going to run you over.
Yeah, it's going to run me over.
Man, it's just, it's enraging. It's the same thing, same guys who like got pumped up and angry about Kaepernick not kneeling for the not standing for the national anthem, as if it's somehow. Oh my goodness! As if it's terrible, this awful thing that a free citizen doesn't stand and act as we would have him act.
Yeah.
For the flag, we would like him to be compelled to stand
by
our wishes and desires, and not having our feelings hurt, and our little sensibilities, as if. Kneeling during the national anthem is an insult to veterans or an insult to the flag of the United States of America or to it's just a crazy.
Well, I would say as if America is anything worthy of patriotism rather than mourning.
Right.
So I really think that we have
killed 50 million babies and we're killing and counting. We have enslaved millions of people. We have only recently let them have equal rights after even...
Well, and then we subverted that, the business of letting one large minority segment of the population have equal rights. We subverted that by destroying, through liberalism, I would say...
Yeah, through statist policies.
Statist policies. We just destroyed the African-American community.
We've enslaved them through welfare and enslaved them through...
And now we're just sort of killing them, you know, because we've compromised, you know. It's awful. It's awful. It's devastating. And there's no mourning. There's no sorrow.
Right.
There's no sense that. Look, I don't. I'm not saying that means we deserve to be attacked by Islamic terrorists who come in and blow us up, but. The weakness that's inside is being used, of course, by threats from the outside. So that's what happens.
But unless we're able to do some self-assessment, as a nation, I don't blame anybody for not standing for the anthem right now, or for not saying the pledge. I won't say the pledge. We are not a nation under God.
Right.
We are not a nation that is indivisible. Only God's indivisible.
Well, and furthermore, the destruction of marriage by our own government, and the insistence that gender or sex be redefined to be something that it's not, none of that makes me feel patriotic
Yeah.
Or like, you know,
America.
let's make America great again. I would say
if you don't love this country, you get packing.
Okay.
And I mean, yeah, that's the just the weird. Sometimes it's kind of this religious reaction to anything that even hints of critical examination of this nation and its history on the right. So there's this. I think it's quasi religious. If it's not religious itself, I mean the flag is a totem that everyone must stand or bow or whatever. And
who should bow to the flag
or whatever? Yeah, it is. It's like a little. It's like a little religious
burn
symbol.
Burn your right? pinch of incense.
Right, and everybody better sing the anthem, and everybody better say the Pledge of Allegiance, and if you don't, you're blaspheming, because you're blaspheming our God. And uh-huh. And if you don't vote for Trump, and if you don't vote Republican, then you're not on God's side here.
I'm friends with different people on Facebook.
No, this is my Facebook. This is my Facebook feed. I'm giving my Facebook feed.
If you're not voting for Hillary, you are also going to hell.
I said
so. There's this well, like right. on the left and the right. Either way, you are a bigot.
Because if you don't vote for Hillary, you're voting for Trump, right? And if you don't vote for Trump, you're voting for Hillary.
So
you and I are voting twice.
We're voting.
Not voting for anybody, we're voting for two people. It's amazing.
It's gonna be great. America is gonna be great again. I do think we should move to Mexico.
Well, okay. So last thing I want to say about this is it, and I know we've been kind of spotty. We haven't been systematic in our usual logical way of discussing issues.
It's because I can't think my way out of it.
Yeah. Well, I'm
Kleenex.
I haven't really formulated my thoughts on this, but. Same thing.
Right, it really is like there's just this queasy,
there's something I'm trying to identify.
Deep, queasy feeling, and it arises, there's this sort of emotional reaction that arises when I get on Facebook and I can't put my finger on what it is that's making me unhappy.
I used to appreciate Fox News like 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
Yeah, we haven't, first of all, we haven't watched TV, but the last time we did, we watched CNN. Just like a
yeah,
I can't believe I said
because Fox News they're all screaming.
Well,
and even CNN isn't that much better, but
yeah, but the screaming was like moderately.
And it was this kind of knee jerk America religion channel.
Yeah, crazy. Can't do it.
Yeah, can't do it. So one last thing I wanted to say is, and that's the reason you can tell this is like a weird kind of religious thing is the when you compare the reaction to Kaepernick and the flag. To the reaction of students on campus when their professor, like we were talking about during the last podcast, mm-hmm. when the professor says something that offends them,
yeah,
it's uncanny the similarity.
The same kind.
I mean,
of
the irrational screaming, mm-hmm. weeping when the professor suggests that maybe you can make up your own minds
Halloween
about
costume.
Halloween costumes.
person are you?
Right. We all every conservative lines up and goes, oh, that's terrible. This is what little snowflakes they are. They can't deal with contrary opinion. And wow, here we are. You know, one man decides, and now it's growing, and I'm glad it is, actually. One man decides to kneel instead of stand at the national anthem. And, you know, thousands of conservative snowflakes begin to melt down. You know, it's amazing that we are unable to deal with, not even, he's not burning the flag. He just didn't want to stand. And if you listen to his comments, he's actually making some pretty reasonable points. He explicitly said that he respected veterans and he respected those who fought
right,
for our country.
It doesn't matter what he says. If he doesn't stand for the flag, then
right.
It doesn't matter what he says.
Right, because when you hear the music play, wherever you are in
the
Babylon,
harp, the pipe,
right,
the
whatever
lute,
you are, when you hear the music play,
the tambourine,
right, you need to worship toward this red, white, and blue statue that I've made. And if you don't, you're going to be thrown into the fiery furnace of conservative opinion.
I feel like that was a little bit narcissistical right there.
Yeah, it was. All right. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
All right. I'm sure that we'll revisit this And you know what? Maybe we should even do a special post-debate podcast to just royal ourselves.
Oh, yes. We could podcast about the debate. I didn't think about that.
As a bonus for changing our debate, our podcast day, which I know has destroyed the lives of two people.
All of our listener.
All of our listener. Okay, I think we should move on to parenting, about which we also know a vast deal.
Yes.
Because we've done a really great job. So I got a really great question, and I'm going to just read little sections of it, okay? You mentioned that you and Matt talk at dinner and the children do not interrupt. So I think that we might have been...
Either we were bragging...
Or we were
out of
drunk.
Place, or because they do
interrupt.
Now we
don't allow them to interrupt, which means that most of the dinner conversation is stop us saying don't talk. Your mother's talking. No, she was talking already. You don't talk. I'm talking. You be quiet. So there's like a refereeing that goes on. Because we don't allow them to interrupt. As we all know, just because you don't allow somebody to do something doesn't mean that they're not going to do it.
I mean, the general principle is there's one conversation at the table,
mm-hmm.
not two, not three, not four. And we're the leaders of that conversation.
Yeah.
So if Anne and I want to talk to each other, the children must learn to be quiet or contribute to that conversation.
Yeah, we might ask them to contribute. So if we're talking about something, we might say...
What do you think about this?
What do you think about that? Or I see that you wanted to talk and you were were chewing while you were trying to talk. So we try to referee it.
Right. And what's the benefit of this? Why are we, I mean, obviously the benefit of not being annoyed and wanting to
run
from the table, but what else?
The main thing, though, is that the dinner table is for you and me. So we talk to each other about things that interest us, and mm-hmm. the children are gradually brought into the things that interest us. First, because we want to like them when they get older.
Yeah.
We don't want to center our lives around them because they're going to leave us.
That's key, I think. They need to learn that the family conversation, the family life doesn't center around what they want to do or say.
Yeah.
And they learn by telling them not, just teaching them not to interrupt, teaches them... My thoughts and feelings are not the most important things in the world.
Right. Which, of course, nobody can understand that idea, but we are trying to do it anyway. But also, I mean, we want them to be interesting people. We want to want to talk to them later, which means they need to learn how to talk to us our rules.
Just think about, and I'm not thinking about anyone personally that I know, in any way whatsoever. Oh, so if you're listening to this, but there are some really horrible conversational problems.
Things that people do in conversation.
So you, and I'm sure you people who are listening have had this, but think of the person who, when you speak to them, actually you don't speak to them; they speak to you.
And they
don't stop. They don't give you a breath. They don't give you a chance to get out. It's just constant.
They don't ask you any questions.
It's all about themselves, and it's all continuous talking, and you can't get away from that person. How annoying is that? And that's annoying. Most likely, I'm not saying we know for sure, but we'd like to create conversation at the table, which will prevent one of our children from being that kind
because
of conversationalist.
Children are all that way. They will talk at you.
Right.
Forever, if you don't tell them to be quiet and without drawing breath. So I have a personal rule that I do not listen to children tell me about the plots of TV shows. No, I'm sorry.
That's boring.
Is that a book? Oh, are you talking about the television? I'm sorry. You can't talk to me about
that. That's completely uninteresting.
Yeah, so you go do... If you would like to talk to me, you can read a paragraph and then you can tell me about it.
Right.
Otherwise, go do something else. So I don't let the children just talk, especially if I'm doing something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think or I'm trying to do some work. They can't just come up and chatter in my ear.
Right.
They have to wait. And then later I'll go and find out what they really wanted to say. So I'm often cutting them off and telling them to be quiet.
Yeah.
Because I feel like civilization needs that.
There's also the conversational tick, I guess, or problem. And you mentioned it a minute ago, where you don't care about the person you're talking to. The other person becomes the receptacle for your thoughts and feelings.
Yeah.
And you're not really interested in what there is going on in the other person's life or the other person's head. So you have this stream of your own thoughts without once saying, "So how are you doing?
Yeah.
Can you tell me about what you think about this?
Yeah.
How do you feel about this?" No open-ended questions.
Yeah.
And so what we hope our children will grow up to do is learn how to be good listeners. And the way they're going to be doing that is they're not going to be talking so much.
They're going to learn. They are going to listen.
Right.
Doesn't mean that they don't talk. Like, no. We don't have little robots around the table. We do a lot of refereeing.
Yeah,
they are always telling one child to be quiet because another child was already speaking and the other, you know, the fifth child just began to speak loudly with his mouth full. Or, you know, and sometimes...
About a completely different subject.
Right. I get, like, if you find me at the end of the table just sitting there helplessly in a heap, I can't shout over the din, and so I just give up. And then I look at you across the table, and you realize that neither of us can be heard because everybody's shouting. Then you'll roar, "Everybody be quiet. One conversation." So,
yeah, that's how it works.
But we do, we have been trying to do the hard work of getting the children to be quiet.
Right.
And then to speak rationally.
Right.
So, if a child is speaking at the table, they're not making any sense.
Yeah.
And they're being stupid. We say, "No. Okay, that's good. Thank you. What do you think?" to another child. We just cut them off. Because you also, if you can't hold up your end in the conversation, then there's no grace for you. I'm just kidding.
No, well, there's a difference between making a bad point or not getting the reasoning correct and just speaking to hear yourself speak.
Right.
And that's what you're talking about. I think is that when a child is just kind of wants to talk and and kind of dominate the conversation, then you have to say no.
But if somebody leaps in, there's like a brief moment where they can come in and they time it well and they're funny or they're interesting, then we praise them to the heights.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, that was, I don't know if we have time to do all of these, but let's see. The next one was about sharing. How do you teach your children to share? I don't really know. Yell at them? I think that's what I did.
I don't know that we had an actual sharing principle. I think we had...
don't break other people's stuff.
Don't break other people's... We did enforce the idea of property rights. And if something belongs to somebody,
if
you can't just take it.
You can't just walk up and take it.
Right. You have to ask and be polite. Because our family was more... the problem of sharing was less than the problem of stealing.
Yeah.
I mean, it was I'm going to take this because I want it. And if you cry, I'm going to beat you down.
Yeah. I'm going to take the block I just took from you and hit you in the head.
Right.
And also, I don't really know, like, if you have something and you were given it and it was yours and some other jerk child comes up and just takes it from you, you don't have to share. Like,
right.
Or you just got it for your birthday. This happens often.
Right.
And everybody says, "I didn't get a turn. I didn't get a turn." You think, actually, you don't get a turn. It's not your birthday.
Right.
So back off.
So I guess what has freaked us out, maybe it's just the number of kids we have, but there's a sense of entitlement that the kid always has.
Yeah,
the
child like always all has. Things belong
all
to
things
me.
All things are mine. So
actually,
give it.
No, none of them are yours.
and so our big task has been to break that sense of entitlement that if the person grew up would be they'd be a liberal socialist. So taking other people's stuff and distributing it to others and taking a bit off the top. Right. So we want to, make sure property rights are respected. And I think what happens though is our older ones now are much like, I would say, Gwendolyn and Rowan and Hayden and Emma are able to share and do share. They're generous people, which is interesting.
They give presents to each other
more.
like, at their birthdays, they'll go and wrap up something that they like and give it away. And so, I think...
Okay, so I think secure having a secure sense of your own property...
allows you to be generous.
Yeah. But if it's always being taken away from you, you're going to be more and more
selfish. Or you're always having to share it.
Right, right.
Even though you just got it. Or...
Yeah.
It's not something the other child really wants... and would enjoy. They just want it because you have it. So I don't buy that either. If you're a little girl and you're holding a beautiful doll, and some thug boy comes up and says, "I want that," and takes it because you have it, he doesn't really want you to share. He just wants to take what you have. He wants
to dominate. Yeah.
And so that little girl doesn't have to share with
the
stupid little boy.
Right.
All right, well, we've dispatched
so
that.
So, the dominance of the week, so Eleanor tends to be...
Oh, she's a
sledgehammer, right?
She takes everything.
For Muriel. Muriel's 2 years older, but they're the same size. And
well, Eleanor's slightly larger. She's the Khloe Kardashian of our family. She's huge. And she's mean.
So if we're not around, she will whack Muriel and take whatever Muriel has and start playing with it. And Muriel will
And then she'll say, "It was my turn." Because now she's like 5 and so she can speak.
Right.
And actually, no, it wasn't your turn.
Yeah.
So you give it back. Because you were horrible. Right. You were a horrible person. Right. And you have to say you were sorry. I do think, though, the key in all of this is to view your children unemotionally.
Yeah.
And with a jaundiced humor eye. So you have to look at their behavior and think about, in your mind, put a little red Trump hat on the kid's head that says make America great again, and then you'll be able to see that what they're doing is stupid
and childish, and then you'll
laugh, and then it won't be as big a deal to you.
Healthy sarcastic skepticism with everything that your child is doing.
The child does.
Right.
It helps. And that makes the children funnier, too. Mm-hmm. Like, they become funny people, and that's so important in a child, I think. Okay, but there's one last question that's really easy. Is 4 any better than 3? At 3.75 years and 12 months, they both seem to be at bad ages. Yes, they do. I would say, okay, the worst ages are 1.
For us anyway, they've been 1 and 3.
3.
Yeah.
4.5. 7.
7's not bad.
11.
No.
Yeah. It gets better around
8, 9. Not discipline-wise. What do you mean?
No, I mean just like the child grates on your nerves.
Oh, okay, yeah, getting on your nerves. Yeah, okay. So discipline-wise, that kind of lessens over time. I mean, we haven't had children at past 4 say no to us.
After 1.5. No.
Yeah.
Our children don't
say no.
That's one thing I think we can say with confidence. The interrupting thing, I guess we lied before, but... our children do not say no to us.
They don't defy. Period. They're not allowed to defy, and they know they're not allowed to defy. So there's no defiant.
Uh-uh. They will say, or, but, and that's as bad as saying no.
Yeah, and they...
If the child says,
Right.
Then that's as if they've said no.
Right. So they stop so they that. I mean, that. I mean, so Emma is very pleasant. Aiden's very pleasant as far as... But but grating on your nerves...
pleasant and grating on your nerves seem to contradict each other. Because children just go through stages where they're just irritating. Their personalities are off. And then they kind of settle into a better space for a while, and then they'll kind of go through another stage where you're like, ugh.
What is this thing that came from my body?
Yeah, everything you're doing today seems wrong somehow. So they kind of go through, but I would say after 4, there's not, those periods get, that kind of irritation is less and diminished.
So Aiden, when he was 10, would want to have something or do something, and he'd have his heart set on it.
I would say he's still in that
place. But when he was 10, he couldn't cope.
Yeah.
And he'd be angry, and he'd be lashing out at his brothers and sisters. Yeah. When he can't get what he wants, like he can't play the video game or he can't do the, really angry and being and sometimes even be yelling at his brother. Now,
so last night, he wanted to eat something. I can't remember what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets anxious about the food question because he's growing. Yeah, so he really gets, like, yeah, emotional. If you pause when he comes in and says, can I eat something? And you pause, and then he looks like, oh my gosh, my life is over. And you can tell that he's getting anxious about
the food question, right? The food
question. So that happened last night. And my response lately has been to say, are you crying? Because I paused, then he laughs.
Yeah. He realizes, right, so he's stupid. Yeah, he's gotten to the point where he's able to see himself and his reactions to things, yeah, and say, okay, I shouldn't act like this. I don't need to.
Right. I don't need to look like the world just ended because you just hesitated before you said I could have a bagel.
Right, right. And we can tease him about it, and he's funny. He laughs. You know, which is
that's what you want, to kind of be able to not tease in a mean way, no, but sort of. Help your child see that what they're doing is stupid,
yeah,
and their reaction is wrong.
Yeah,
in a gently
loving fun way, funny way. Yeah. So that all to say is there are periods of time where your child will irritate you to no end. It's important to make the distinction between discipline and irritation. I mean, you don't always want to discipline a child because they're irritating you. You want to discipline a child when they're disobeying or defying or doing something that you've told them not to do.
And yeah, you really have to bear through the periods of irritation and hide, jam that down and hide it, and not let the child know that everything they're doing is setting you on edge.
Right, because you want them to know that you like them.
Yeah.
And even when you don't.
It's not about your feelings, right. It's about your actions.
Right.
So you have to just...
And you also, like we said this before, you want to avoid... Like, I don't want my kids to grow up and say... The one rule I knew is I never want to get my dad mad.
Yeah.
You want them to say, no, my dad, there were rules and we had to follow them. Not, right. Oh my goodness,
is this going to make him mad?
Yeah.
You want it to be action rather than emotion.
Yeah.
And I think that played out pretty well.
Yeah.
Except when I begin to scream at 8 o'clock at night.
But your kid, you know, it's interesting when you lose it. Your kids kind of...
Yeah, they look at me.
They know you're...
that I look at them. And they're like, oh, they know it's 8 o'clock.
They know you're losing it.
Okay.
Right. One of the dogs threw up in the living room, so that's our cue for the end of the...
Well, this is great. Let's make...
We have 4 dogs right now.
America great again.
Because we were dog sitting for our secretary.
Yeah, and actually they are all here with us, and they're cold.
We have all 4 beds, all 4 dogs in our bed.
It's quite crowded.
Which is exactly what I dreamed of when I was an adolescent boy thinking of marriage.
Someday I'm going to be with a woman and I'm going to have 2 dogs, or 4 dogs, 2 cats, and 6 children all with me all the time.
All the time, right.
It's going to be amazing. Well, so thank you so much for listening, and I apologize, of course, for changing the day, but I hope that you'll continue to listen, even though we've shattered the dreams of this great nation. See you next week.